All right, I'm going to go ahead and call our March 3rd, 2025 Columbia Pre-Council to order. We have two items under the agenda, one for open discussion, and that is the Convention Center Feasibility Study. So I assume that I'm kicking it over to you, Amy Schneider.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. My name is Amy Schneider. I'm the Director of the Convention and Visitors Bureau. And I wanted to, before we had a presentation, just kind of talk about what this is and why we did it. We conducted a feasibility study in response to Columbia's ongoing growth and the increasing interest in bringing business to the community. So as we continue to expand, the demand for facilities capable of holding larger conferences and events is rising. The study was designed to serve as a tool for developers and stakeholders interested in investing in Columbia. By analyzing the potential for a convention center, the CVB aimed to provide a comprehensive roadmap for future development. The study examined key factors such as market demand, potential economic impact, and site considerations, and it offers insights to guide informed decision making. Most importantly, the city is not interested in building a convention center that would directly compete with hotels already offering meeting and conference space. Instead, the focus is on identifying opportunities that complement existing resources while enhancing Columbia's ability to attract larger events and conferences. Ultimately, the goal is to position Columbia as a competitive destination for conferences and events while supporting the city's broader economic growth. The feasibility study is a strategic step towards ensuring that Columbia's infrastructure keeps pace with its expanding opportunities and benefits both the tourism industry and the local community. Really, this is economic development through tourism, and this is a study that can be used as we talk about expanding our facilities. With that, I'm going to introduce you to Tyler Othen, who is with CSL, and he is the gentleman that conducted the feasibility study.
I have a friend who lives out there in the big plane.
We're ready for you. I'm going to introduce you to Tyler now. Are you on? Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Tyler, we have the city council, and then we've got some hoteliers and city staff. And I did a little introduction of why we did the feasibility study, and now I'm going to pass it off to you.
Well, perfect. Well, hello, everybody. I am joined today by Mr. Don Grinberg as well. He was the architect on the project while CSL worked on the market analysis and feasibility side. I am going to share my screen. Just 1 second here. Let me get into the slideshow. So I thought I'd just would look at this first at a 30,000 foot level and just talk about the why, you know, behind these projects before we delve into the research. You know, talk about the importance of convention centers and conference centers and event facilities. A convention or conference center in many destinations, especially the size of Columbia, these are the most visited and really visible assets for people who are coming into a destination for the first time. They're also a welcome then for whether they're corporations or associations. Sometimes we're from very high value sectors like medical or tech or financial. You know, this is an opportunity to host very influential decision makers from around your state, from around your region, from around your country in these buildings. And we've been doing a lot of analysis using Placer AI, looking at who's really visiting these buildings in different destinations. And so far in our research, we're finding that people who visit a convention center usually have 25% higher average incomes than the area population base. And then ranging anywhere from 30 to 50% of these visitors, depending on the market, 30 to 50% is their first time in the region. So we're looking to have a building that can host people maybe for their very first time and capture their economic impact, as well as looking for a facility that could host a multitude of community uses and community program. So when we kicked off the study, actually back at the end of July of last year, we did meet with 30 or so local stakeholders, did smaller focus groups to really learn about what direction should our study go, what should we focus on, what are the needs. And you know, the first comments that we had were, you know, we have a convention center, we have an event center, so some went at the Holiday Inn. Some folks thought it was older. maybe it does not meet the needs of some event planners. That was something that there was pillar number one that we wanted to investigate. Other folks talked about we need a larger space than we've ever had before to host larger even graduations, to host large RV or auto shows and consumer shows. Some folks just wanted to see something that could host bigger conventions and trade shows. Other people talked about, hey, we should have a huge opportunity here. We're in central Missouri, we're in the middle of St. Louis and Kansas City, and we have the University of Missouri. This should be really marketable. This should be a strong conference convention destination. So again, we're investigating the plausibility of that. And some other people, some other issues that people brought up that I'm going to touch on throughout this presentation include the preference for a public-private partnership. You know, a lot of people talked about the public sector shouldn't bear the full cost of this type of facility. We'd love to find a private sector partner to get something done. We'll talk about what that maybe means toward the end of this presentation. A lot of people also talked about building this kind of facility, this large public assembly convention center facility in downtown, and to showcase really the most unique parts of Missouri. So that was a preference that we heard from folks. And if we don't build downtown, a lot of people wanted to create a district. If we're going to build this building, how do we make sure that there's a vibrant scene, a vibrant district around it, and things for people to do when they walk out the door? And related to that, people also wanted to see a unique, authentic, advanced building. I think the exciting part of any new convention or conference center project around the country is a lot has changed over the last 5 years. So any building you build now gets to respond to new preferences and new trends that are going on that event planners now have when they're picking the sites that they go to nationally. You can build something that is truly cutting edge, that's truly experiential, that touches a lot of the things, the requirement points that planners now have. So we'll get into that and what that means exactly in a bit. The study process was thorough, very, very detail-oriented, and focused on hearing from the market, directly from the market. We did look at existing conditions. We looked at the demographics of the market, the current hotel base, the current economics. We reviewed about 26 different competitive conference facilities, convention facilities around the state to look at, are there gaps in terms of the size of facilities in the area. We also looked at nationally at similar size cities with similar smaller to mid-sized convention facilities and try to glean some key lessons from those. But the most important piece really is looking at what's going on in the industry and what we heard from event planners. And we surveyed 50 event planners representing just over 200 annually occurring events. And their perceptions of the market and what they'd like to see in terms of the size of the product, quality of product, is really what drove us to a lot of the recommendations that we'll be getting to at the end of the presentation. And we then did a number of cost-benefit analyses that we'll talk about as well. What is the feasibility of really building this facility that is built for event planner demand? So the local market, the existing conditions analysis, a couple of slides I wanted to point out included this analysis using Placer again. And just to point out that Columbia already is a strong tourism market. And so as far as the number of visitors that you guys get into the city, largely because of the university, you were really outperforming a lot of those 27 comparable markets that we looked at in terms of bringing people from out of town. So we know we're pulling in people from St. Louis and Kansas City, even from Chicago being such a large market and being so nearby. We're bringing in 1.7 million visitors according to Place, so that's 3.8 million visit nights in theory, whether those are at hotels or staying with friends. But we know we have a base. We know we already have this draw, that we're successful in somewhat of a leisure or corporate market. We know we have good facilities. That was a promising first point to us. Beyond that, we want to look at where are these visitors typically staying. So this is a quick overview of the hotel base we have today. The Holiday Inn, you know, with the existing event facility and the expo hall, is by a pretty considerable margin the largest hotel property in the area. A couple of things we don't have are upper upscale chains. That includes your full-service Marriott, your full-service Hilton. Of course, we don't have luxury chains, but we do have several upscale properties and some upper mid-scale properties. But this is what I call a mid-sized university market, where we don't really have those higher-end full-service hotels, and that is reflected in our hotel performance data. So the reason I'm showing this and looking at occupancy and ADR We're somewhat lower in terms of some other markets we've done recent work in. We're below 60% occupancy in a lot of years. Our ADR is trending just above 110 now. But I'm pointing this out, A, because a convention center would address some of this performance. It would certainly help raise ADR. The hope is you bring in groups and somewhat raise occupancy. But I also wanted to point out, because we're going to talk a little bit later about this idea of a convention center, it's going to need possibly a new hotel, possibly, depending on where you build it. This is where it's a little bit of a challenge. The economics of the market, just looking at occupancy and ADR, it doesn't really beg for a new hotel, especially a convention quality hotel, to be built anytime soon. So how would that happen? And that's going to be something that we talk about after we get through the survey results. This is a quick look at today's event space. So what do we have as far as convention facilities, conference facilities today? And certainly the Holiday Inn is by far the largest facility we have. The Expo Hall is technically an exhibit hall, 19,000 square feet of space. Somewhat lower ceilings, somewhat more of a dated aesthetic. You know, there are some issues as far as its usability, say, by you know, groups from certain sectors who might be looking for that size of space just to host their food function. You know, it's not ideal for some groups from the state or regional association, but it can get the job done for a lot of trade shows and a lot of what we call typically consumer shows. It offers that square footage. At the same time, there's about an 8,000 square foot ballroom at the Holiday Inn. So we have this a mid-sized product already. And again, a lot of the focus is on how much bigger do we really need beyond this facility, and what could that mean? Beyond that, we have the Hilton Garden Inn, the Drury Plaza. Each of these offers some different size facilities. The Hilton Garden Inn with a 9,000 square foot ballroom, although those are very low ceilings and might be more suitable for your cultural events, weddings, quinceañeras, not necessarily equipped for a lot of rotating conventions and trade shows. Now, when we look at a more macro view of the region, of the state, and what the gaps might be in terms of convention facilities, here's where we notice a little bit of what I call it a convention desert in northern Missouri in terms of the size of our largest space at 19,000 square feet. We don't offer the 25,000 or 30,000+ square foot halls, you know, that are in Branson or Springfield to our south. We don't have the big box hotels, obviously, that St. Louis has to the east or Kansas City has to the west. We know Jefferson City is talking about, you know, a bigger convention product. We do have Margaritaville somewhat in our radius, kind of toward that 50-mile range. But overall, this jumped out to us that, okay, geographically, what a lot of stakeholders are saying might be correct. You know, we have this advantage of being really directly between Kansas City and St. Louis for associations, but we don't maybe have as large of a product as some of our competitors down in the south. But we wanted to look just beyond the competitive facilities, and I will say this analysis, this whole study sort of had a roller coaster. We would do one analysis and feel really positive or feel like there was an argument for a bigger center, and then other times we'd do another analysis and the argument was for a smaller center. When we look at it nationally, at similar size markets, you know, we do see these convention facilities that are here. I just want to point out the largest contiguous space column. The median size of these facilities is about a 24,500 square foot exhibit hall. That's what they offer. So really only 5,000 or so square feet larger than our current largest hall over at the Expo Hall. But these facilities typically are 30 to 35 foot ceilings, very, very tall. They're true exhibition convention halls. They do offer a little bit more functionality. But then when we do look at the demographics in terms of the size of our market, Columbia is highlighted in light blue here, we can see we're below the median in terms of just our overall market size. So before we started doing the surveys and knowing what you guys offered already at Holiday Inn, we did start to think, well, how much of a larger facility do we need? When we look at the demographics, you know, this might argue that, you know, 19,000 seems about right. But we do know that there's other issues with that 19,000, just again, as far as ceiling height, as far as the finish of space, as far as production capabilities, technology capabilities. We kept all that in mind as we went along. But as we went through and just benchmarked our destination, our facilities against others, it didn't seem like we were too far off. But now when we get into the survey outreach and what we were hearing from planners, and what they want to see in the market and what would get them here to Columbia is where some of the stories started to change. This is a quick look at the likelihood that 40 different planners would come to Columbia. So these are 40. I said we contacted 50 event planners. 10 of them were corporate planners. Their responses were a bit more open-ended because a lot of them planned dozens of events. So their feedback is in the full report. But I want to focus on the 40 association planners who typically plan, say, anywhere from 1 to 4 events per year. They work specifically for associations, state or regional associations. They're planning those annual conventions or trade shows or annual gatherings for a lot of those groups. And they're typically looking for buildings that offer exhibit space, ballroom space, and meeting space, at least a majority of these respondents. So the groups that we talked to, actually 82% of them exhibited at least positive likelihood, indicated they would at least possibly go to Columbia. What jumped out to us was that 34%, just over a third, would definitely come to Columbia. And this wasn't just an electronic survey that we put out. These were in-depth interviews over the phone, over Zoom, where we really sat down with these folks and went into detail about, okay, what appeals to you about the market? What could we build to get you here? And how often would you come here? And a lot of that extra data is in the full report. But this likelihood, for context, stands out as one of the highest positive response rates we've had, at least over the last 5 years. So from 65 or so similar studies in comparable markets, these are typically regional mid-sized markets, you know, we can see that our definitely rate was actually the highest we've had. The positive response rate was one of the highest we've had. The strength of interest, that weights the definite and likely responses that people would come, that was the highest we've had over the last 5+ years. Where we moderate a little bit is Missouri doesn't have as big of an association population as some other states. But still, we have a demand index at the very bottom here of 5.49. You know, that puts us really in the upper end of what we've seen recently in studies in terms of just the overall intensity of demand. But what does that mean? It means vendors would certainly come here, and we'll get into a couple of slides of the ultimate facility that they could bring them here. This is a quick rating of Columbia versus some of the other Missouri destinations. You can see we're third. You know, they put us right up there with St. Louis and Kansas City. Now, we always take these charts when we do studies for specific markets with a grain of salt. We are talking to these folks about Columbia. Some of them are returning our calls because they heard we're doing a study for Columbia, so they're more apt to speak pretty positively about the market we're studying. But still, there's a pretty marked jump from St. Charles to Columbia. And a lot of the comments that came with this are, you know, there's inklings of St. Louis and Kansas City in Columbia. They know about the downtown. They know about the growth it's experienced. They know about, obviously, the university in town. And again, that central driving location was a huge driving piece behind this score. The ability that half their membership base can come from St. Louis, half their membership base can come from Kansas City. They both have about an equal, you know, hour and a half drive time. That really, really appealed to them, just that logistic piece. So we're right up there with some of those other markets, you know, St. Louis, Kansas City, that have the big box hotels. And in terms of the seasonality, when they would come here, the good news is it would actually, as I mentioned, help a lot with the occupancy ADR issues, because they would really focus on coming here in November. 16% of respondents said their event was in November. That's one of our lower occupancy periods. 8% said January, 10% said February. You know, there's a sizable portion of these that aren't coming in the summer when we don't, and we have okay occupancy in the summer, but they would really help the meet period that we have in January and February. Another thing we focused on with planners beyond just their interest in Columbia, we wanted to talk to them about trends they see going on in the industry. And, you know, by our estimates over the last 4 years, certainly since COVID, you know, up to 35% of event planners around the country have retired or gone to other industries just because the shock of COVID, kind of scared people off to other sectors or they, you know, because the conventions were down for 2 or 3 years, they retired altogether. So we've had this new generation of decision makers who've come into the workforce. And we've really seen it in our surveys. We've seen it in the differences in preferences and ideas that planners give us about how conventions and how convention facilities can be enhanced. And they're looking for new experiences, new spaces, They're looking to have really authentic experiences or off-site excursions while they're in a town or destination, and they're looking for the building to exhibit some of those qualities. And we've heard from planners again and again that they're no longer looking for a stale, you know, fluorescent lit convention facility that could be anywhere in America. They want to know the uniqueness of the destination and the building they're going to. So a lot of the facets of building design that we're seeing as being more and more important include that outdoor event space or connectivity to outdoor event space, being a part of a walkable district and having amenities around a box, not just building meeting spaces and lobbies, but building, you know, the meeting spaces that can be used almost as lobbies where you can host cocktail events. They have movable furniture and technology in the rooms. And then on vice versa, you can use lobbies as meeting spaces and activate those for all sorts of events. They're looking at the buildings, every square foot of the building is being usable for events and programming. And what that means is, you know, a lot of these can't be accommodated by older facilities. A lot of these new build projects, as I mentioned, can cater to these. There's all sorts of opportunity to design something that they can adapt to some of these experiential, more dynamic uses that event planners are looking for. And that's something that we certainly kept in mind for the recommended building program and some of the costs that are coming up. Probably the most important piece, you know, that we hear from planners is this idea of the multi-purpose hall. You know, you have your traditional exhibit hall that's a concrete floor, 30 to 35 foot high ceilings. You know, you have your 90 foot pillar grid. It hosts your car shows, auto shows, RV shows. And then you have your ballroom, the carpeted high finished space with 25 foot ceilings that can host food functions, general sessions. But what we're seeing more and more in some of these mid-sized markets, and even in some of the larger convention centers, is this addition of this blending of those two ideas. This multi-purpose space that's often carpeted, it has the 30 to 35 foot ceilings, but it can host both your traditional trade show, it's big enough to do that, as well as be, because of the carpeting and production capabilities and rigging capabilities up top, can be this high-end experiential food and beverage space. And you can see here just some of the other uses and some ideas of how event planners want to use the same space, whether they're for trade shows, large food functions, almost these open layout networking events, sports. You know, these are spaces should be large enough to host basketball, volleyball, and have the ceiling heights to support those, as well as an assortment of other emerging events, whether it's esports, whether it's drone racing. There's a number of these new event segments that are looking for this space that offers both the size, the finish, and the production capabilities all in one place. Now, this is where when we look at the existing facilities we have today, you know, none of these can really do it all with the square footage that they offer. So this is where we're starting to think, okay, this is maybe a product that might work with the convention planners, conference planners that we have talked to. And here's a chart that just looks at the size of this space that event planners are looking for. So over here on the left is a quick look at exhibit space needs of surveyed event planners who are interested in Columbia. You can see here that this is separated, segmented into percentiles. In theory, if we wanted to accommodate everybody who was interested in Columbia, we would need an exhibit hall at 60,000 square feet. Now, that's what we call building the church for Easter Sunday. There's only so many events that are that large. This was probably just one event that said they needed that kind of size range. So typically, we do recommend to markets that are building something entirely new, aim for that 85 to 90% range. So this is where, funny enough, a 19,000 square feet Holiday Inn is at 85. And then at 90 is a pretty large gap. You know, there were several events that were between 19 and 35. So a few things you can say here are that there is a handful of events, there's a sizable part of the market that it can be accommodated by the Holiday Inn. But it's not a majority of the market. But at the same time, Holiday Inn, we know about the ceiling height and other limitations. There's probably other events that we're leaving on the table that would rather not use that space. And that's what we heard from some planners, a small selection of planners who've been to the market before, that they would need something, you know, if it were 19,000 square feet, they would need taller ceiling heights and other capabilities. In terms of ballroom space, similar story here. So 90% of the market that could be accommodated by a 13,000 square foot ballroom. So that's in addition to the 35,000 square foot exhibit hall. current Holiday Inn Executive Center has about an 8,400 square foot mall, and that's 78% of market. So slightly undersized compared to what we typically like to see in a market that's building something entirely new. So again, the story is, you know, the market's looking for something slightly bigger, but knowing the open-ended responses from planners, you know, the bigger story is they're looking for something a bit more up-to-date that matches those experiential and more dynamic preferences that I talked about that planners are showing earlier. Here's just an overview of the percentiles broken down by different event spaces, exhibit space, ballroom space, meeting space. You can see here we've shaded in gray those event space capabilities, those event space demands that can't be accommodated by the Holiday Inn. So we're under 90% pretty much across the board, and then we're under 80% for ballroom space. So it's definitely room to grow if the product were available. But we will talk about, okay, it's not that huge of a leap. We don't need that much more space than what the Holiday Inn already offers. There is an option on the table, definitely. Take advantage of that. Use that as a strength. We'll talk about that in a few slides. But if we were just building a new convention center today, just to support demand, accommodate demand, what would that look like? And that's about a 25 to 30,000 square foot, what we're calling multi-purpose hall, multi-purpose box. So something that, again, could be used almost as a ballroom, but also could be used for exhibit hall purposes, for conventions, trade shows. In addition to that, a separate ballroom that had maybe 10,000 to 12,000 square feet and 20 to 25 foot ceiling heights. In addition to the breakout meeting spaces, 8,000 to 10,000 square feet of separate breakout meeting spaces, and then a hotel support for this box, what would you need? Ideally, you know, in looking at the comparable facilities we reviewed nationally, 300 or more guest rooms would be ideal attached to this size of a facility. There's a lot of examples where there's only 225 or 250 attached to a property of this size, but then you have to rely on, you know, two, three, or four separate properties, at least within a half mile or a very, very short driving distance to make up the rest of those hotel needs. So 300 to 400 additional quality rooms, maybe within a half mile of this product. In terms of parking, we did do some calculations as far as what would be needed for both the convention center and then the hotel that could be connected. That would likely be 750 or so dedicated parking spaces. So either on surface lot or parking structure, that would have to be accounted for. And we made sure that was a part of project cost estimate that we'll have a little bit later. Now, considering that program and remembering and calling back to what we heard from a lot of stakeholders in our site visit, we wanted to look at two options, one that was fully public-led. Many convention centers, I mean, a significant majority of true convention centers are publicly funded projects. They're public products. But we do know that there's a desire to at least entertain the option of working with a private developer. And so that's why we have this scenario two, where we're assuming that this program we talked about becomes a little altered and is a part of a public-private partnership where the public sector would pay likely an upfront incentive to bring in the developer, to incentivize the developer to build a hotel and help pay for the cost of the convention or conference facility. We'll get to what those costs might look like from the public sector versus the private sector, but that product would look probably more like a smaller, slightly smaller version of the recommended building program, where the ballroom or the multi-purpose hall would be likely replaced by what we call a grand ballroom, something that's a little bit of a higher finish. It might not have the 30 to 35 foot ceilings. It might be more suited for lots of food and beverage functions. That'd be about 25,000 square feet instead of 30. In terms of overall sellable space, the P3 scenario two offers about 43,000 square feet of sellable space, whereas the public option offers 52. So they're slightly different products, and that is reflected in its utilization projections in terms of events, in terms of attendance. We can see by year five, the convention center hosts about 342, or is estimated to host 342 events. That results in about 146,000 attendees. Whereas that scenario two, it's churning and burning more business, especially from smaller meetings and banquets. There's 404 events for that scenario, leading to about 110,000 attendees. So, from a per event basis, this public-owned scenario, the convention center, the larger convention center, it's hosting more of what we call citywide conventions, conferences, that are going to be using multiple hotels at once. They're going to need that to house their guests. Whereas the scenario two, there's pros and cons of it, but it's more of an insular model that would be privately owned, privately managed. That hotel owner gets to pick and choose, you know, the business it goes after, and is likely going to put a priority on smaller but high food and beverage revenue events like meetings, banquets, but that might not necessarily produce room nights for other properties. This hotel would get the properties, but other hotels might room nights. Other hotels might get less room nights as a result of this P3 model, where this new hotel absorbs a lot of those room nights. We looked at financial scenarios, so again, just comparing the characteristics of these models. The scenario one, where we're building just an entirely new convention center somewhere, but not building a hotel with it, we would estimate this to likely run at a deficit, an annual deficit. This is just a high-level estimate. By year five, we're at around a $200,000 operating deficit. That's common. I'd say about 90 to 95% of these public government convention centers don't quite break even. There's many, many dark days at these. They can host plenty of local events, but a lot of the times the staff, the overhead, you know, doesn't quite match up with the events that they're bringing in. Their return on investment really is the economic impact, the new spending they're bringing into the community from hosting new visitors. But I will say that a lot of these facilities, some that are privately managed, but some that are even publicly managed, more and more often they are breaking even. I'd say business practices are getting a bit more efficient. They are including things like restaurants, small even food and beverage kiosks. They're selling their outdoor spaces to small private groups to help generate more revenue. So more and more of these facilities are at least getting closer to a break-even level. Now, scenario two, this public-private partnership, I don't have to go into too much detail. This is a pretty big spreadsheet on the right, but you know, this is going to be a private-owned venture. So of course, it's eventually going to have an EBITDA, you know, of a property of this scale with this size of event facility next to it. And we would hope that it gets to 8.9 or 9 million EBITDA in terms of profit. Now, this all goes to the owner, obviously, but the benefit of going with a P3 project is there's no ongoing subsidy, but you supply this developer with an upfront investment. But then the other benefits, you know, looking at the economic impacts associated with all these scenarios. Scenario one is, as I mentioned, there's going to be 134,000 attendees. That's going to be 30,000 room nights, net new room nights for the community. The annual financial loss, you know, again, is going to be about $200,000 annual loss for that. Project costs, we'll get into that in just a second. Do we have a question about EBITDA? I think somebody just
acronyms. Earnings before interest.
This is before depreciation, before amortization, before taxes. It's essentially your financial operating profit from a building before some of those non-operating expense items. So again, this is all going to the private developer. This is the profit that's made by the private developer who's in town. Now, we'll get to what the cost for the public sector is to basically pay for this private developer to have that kind of EBITDA. Over here, it's a very different story. The convention center, it's an investment by the public sector, but it's being run as a public asset, and it's very difficult to make it run at a surplus. But the other benefits of a public-owned convention center, and I'll get the same benefits on the next slide for the P3 model. But we can see here that we have an estimated project cost of about $100 million for this convention center that we're talking about. This was a very different price tag just 6 or 7 years ago. This project would have been, you know, $50 million then. But we do know the escalation in inflation and construction. Project costs are very, very, very different nationally. You know, there's not really a market where that it hasn't affected. But it would lead to economic impact from the construction and the jobs that would create. There would also be about $18 million per year in new direct spending. So that's spending at local hotels, local restaurants, other local businesses. Then that would be re-spent throughout the economy. So we have $12.4 million in indirect and induced spending. As those initial dollars are spent, those then pay for new jobs, support new jobs in the area, and then those new employees in the area then go spend their dollars elsewhere in the community. So we have about $30 million in total economic output per year. That's certainly a part of this argument. And that's about $12.5 billion in wages, new wages for the area. And that's about that supports about 382 full-time equivalent jobs, as well as $1.1 million in annual tax collection. So significant benefits, at least for the economic side. Number two, this is where it's a little bit of apples and oranges. Because we're building this convention center as well as a hotel, we're building this entirely new full-service hotel, it is going to put the direct spending numbers higher. It's going to have the annual job figures higher. All the numbers across the board are higher. And we can see here the public costs, we only have at $80 million as opposed to the $100 million on the previous slide. Now, this can be a little confusing. I mean, somebody would look at this and say, scenario two's the no-brainer here. But there are cons that come with a private-owned convention center. A, you know, it's privately owned. They can do what they want. Then they're, again, going to be going after events that make them the most money, not necessarily produce room nights for other hotels, other businesses in the region. Number two, they may also, you know, not be in the market as long. As a public-owned asset, obviously you have the backing of the public sector. It's going to be around for several years, whereas as a private facility, can do what it wants with the event space, can do what it wants with its operations. It's not typically ideal for a lot of destinations unless it's a small upfront incentive that's required by the public sector. And we'll do what that upfront cost could be from the public sector. But I'll start first with scenario one at standalone convention center, the recommended building program. And we're assuming that's about 109,000 gross square feet. Construction cost per gross square feet, even in smaller markets. And this is development cost, so this is construction plus soft costs like design fees, architecture fees, site acquisition. We put that at 950. The hope would be you could value engineer, maybe this becomes slightly cheaper, but this is where we're playing it safe. So that gives us about a development cost of, say, just over $100 million for the big box. Now, the other option, again, in scenario two, we're looking at different ranges because of different per key costs. You know, this is a bit more of a variable estimate because we're looking at, okay, how much does it cost to build each room? Here we're looking at a project cost that could range from $140 million to $160. So this is, again, that convention center, slightly smaller convention center, slightly smaller version of a recommended building program with a 300-room hotel attached to it. And we're looking at about a cost of $140 to $160. You know, again, private sector's involved in this one. So what could we save? And this is where we see an exercise. Depending on different capitalization rates and what the developer demands, and depending on the different per-key construction rates, not to get too deep in these numbers in the breakdown, but we are looking at anywhere from a $68 million to $92 million investment, and most likely, just considering kind of the median of the whole feasibility gap exercise, about $80 million investment from the public sector. That would be the highest as far as a market of this size. You know, that we've seen, $80 million to help fund a private developer and help fund this project. There's all sorts of other details that could go into this, you know, including, you know, booking guidelines. The developer could be beholden to hosting some number of groups that produce room nights at other properties. Those could all be part of negotiations. But I will say, to incentivize the developer that's going to own this property, give them $80 million, basically half the cost, if not more than half the cost of their project, it's a big ask. It's a big ask, even though it's $20 million cheaper than owning our own asset. That's the con, you don't get to own the asset. So there's a few options here, and this is where we start to look at some advantages of different sites, and that's why we will be looking at Holiday Inn and maybe some of the advantages that could offer. Because again, we're looking at either a $100 million option, fairly expensive, we know that. Certainly could be done. Other communities like Lincoln, Nebraska is working on their convention facility. That's probably $120 million right now. They plan to finalize funding for that in this next year. But it it's certainly not what communities were looking at just even 5, 6, 7 years ago when they were looking to build these convention conference facilities. And then on the flip side, this $80 million price tag to help a private developer, typically tough to push through in a lot of markets, but it's still an option that's on the table. And when it comes to coming up with the public funds, we have more detail on how often these options are used, but the revenue bonds for a project of this magnitude would be needed, where those bonds are either backed by sales tax. In this case, in Missouri, there's examples of restaurant taxes. And in a lot of markets where we've done these studies, a 1%, 2% tax on restaurants often could produce upwards of $10 million or at least several million dollars a year in terms of debt service coverage. So it certainly could be an option. We talk a little bit about that. Other types of options that kind of supplement the overall price tag include TIFs, tax-taking increment financing, pay-as-you-go certificates of participation are used less and less, but state and federal assistance, some of those programs could be options on the table. And then other things, private sector participation doesn't necessarily mean the private sector building the hotel, but there could be naming rights opportunities, there could be other sponsorship opportunities in the facility, and obviously private fundraising. But for the bulk of this project cost, we would likely be looking at some kind of revenue bond, some kind of bond backed by one of these tourism-related taxes. The sites, this final piece of the puzzle, where could we build this? And a lot of this is driven by this economic piece. The price tag is fairly large. A site that might give us the opportunity to cut back on some of those costs certainly was a part of the scoring. But we did look at 18 different sites, different areas around town in our initial site visit in July. We went to about 16 out of the 18 in person, and then the other two or three that were added, we did some detailed Google Street View touring. But we looked at all 18, and we did sit down with Amy as well as some other stakeholders to come up with a shorter list of those that we could really focus on, just using our own expertise and knowing the strengths and challenges of the site. We chose the Veterans United, Discovery Park, Keene Avenue, Holiday Inn, Downtown Columbia, Stevens Lake as our top six. And that led us to a more in-depth analysis of, their site suitability. Do they have the acreage available? Do they have utilities ready to go? Are they also approximate to things the planners are looking for? And the interview planners we spoke with really, really stressed that it should be by hotels, restaurants, shopping, and retail options. We also looked at those community surroundings. So is it compatible with the neighborhood? Would it disrupt anything? Would it disrupt traffic flow? Would it require a lot more parking than is available in the area? All that required our consideration. And because of the size of the area, because of the cost saving potential it offers, we do have site 4 here in the Holiday Inn Mall area as our number one rated site at a total score of 399. Just behind that at 370 is downtown, because obviously that's the strongest by far in terms of walkability, in terms of having amenities on site. And then at number 3, we have Discovery Park. The rest of these sites, other than Holiday Inn and downtown, are basically greenfield sites. You can do what you want with them. But the momentum at Discovery Park, the ability to potentially partner with university on the development could be pretty promising. But you would need to likely pay for this entirely new convention facility. That convention facility can't just be standalone. You'll likely need a new hotel property to support it. So, again, it's basically that full price tag that we talked about, the $100 million convention center, plus you need a developer to build a hotel, or you could pay a developer to build your convention center and hotel for $80 million. Again, fairly pricey. But we have a bit more of a focused conversation on Holiday Inn and the opportunity there. And what we put out in the report is a breakdown of how much money we could save. But I'll let Don talk to this a little bit. But, the hope would be here is that we could take this Holiday Inn, potentially build what we're missing in the market, and that's this 25 to 30,000 square foot multi-purpose hall, and then repurpose the expo hall at the Holiday Inn into the ballroom and meeting space that we're missing that could complement the multi-purpose hall. But I'll let Don talk about it a little bit more as well.
Thank you, and hello, everyone. I think Tyler summed up the key aspect of the site, which is the it's on a bigger piece of property than downtown, and the parking situation of 750 cars can be more easily solved here. Our thought is, in this era of needing to be cost-effective and sustainable, is the conversion of the existing X Hall to a combination ballroom, some meeting room, and a new major kitchen might be able to allow us to save some of the costs, and then using square footage south of the building, so we're sort of looking north in this year, northeast, build a new X Hall with a courtyard of open courtyard of arrival and departure, place for buses, taxis, cars, etc. So that would then require keeping the existing operation going during construction. So phasing this project is certainly a challenge. If we needed to go vertical with more parking, that's doable on the north side of the building. So this checks the boxes in terms of size, and also may involve the decision of, in the long-term future, building more hotel rooms somewhere on this property. The number of rooms on the Holiday Inn, I think Tyler mentioned, is more than we have immediately downtown with the Broadway Hotel. So that's another advantage. This owner is already investing in this building, improving a lot of the ambiance. So there's almost a feeling of a head start already going on with this property. We go to the next slide.
Yeah, and just to add one more thing on that, Don, and you said, I mean, we have the hotel rooms here, we have other properties around us, not necessarily immediately walkable, but very, very short driving distances. The biggest advantage here is you only have to build a multi-purpose hall and then pay for a renovation of Expo Hall. The hope would be, instead of a $100 million project, this could be 50, it could be half the cost, where you're leveraging the existing building. Now, that doesn't include a parking solution. Maybe that's a parking structure you need. This would have to be studied a bit more. But the hope would be, and there's a very, very, very good chance that it's cheaper and considerably cheaper than the entirely new convention center concept.
I will add, there is a strong national tendency to be building new convention centers downtown, and most communities are willing to bite the bullet and pay some premium cost, which generally involves a more vertical building on tighter sites, a higher land acquisition cost. But the tourist and visitor to Columbia loves the main street and ability to choose restaurants and walk to the university and have a feeling of engagement that the downtown offers that maybe the Holiday Inn site doesn't. So we took a look at, are the sites available? Is the site available? When I say sites, because it's plural, to land and aggregate multiple ownerships into one parcel that is big enough to accommodate even the smaller end of the range of 30,000 square foot exhibition multi-purpose space? And the answer was no. We looked at the site just adjacent to the new hotel expansion, and is so small that it doesn't even get as close to 30,000 feet. So we didn't obviously design the project, but as we looked at footprint studies, we found that to build the recommended building program, even the lower end of its range, at the downtown site adjacent to the hotel at Broadway, would require yet further land acquisition to the north of the hotel site, which then drives up the price. And it would possibly bifurcate, meaning separate the X Hall by a street, keeping East Walnut open for fire ingress, etc. So you end up with an interesting project with an X Hall connected at an upper level, maybe under the street as well, with a ballroom meeting room complex, and then needing to solve, obviously, for service access on a very tight service streets at the back of the project. So we basically concluded we can build downtown. It has all the amenities of a downtown site, but it would probably be a smaller building and would definitely cost more per square foot. Tyler, back to you.
Well, that's at the wrap. I mean, that's an overview of everything. There's certainly a lot more detail in the report, and you know, this was a fairly complex one. Not really having a straightforward top site, but there's some opportunities, obviously those two that we talked about. And the data is there, the information is there about what it would take to build something entirely new. So I think we have some time still for questions, and we can certainly go through some of those.
Yeah. Amy, did you want to touch on anything before we open up to questions?
Before you ask questions, there's a couple of things. First of all, the Holiday Inn, as of 2 weeks ago, is now the Wyndham. So it has changed names, and they are doing some renovations to that. Just for everyone's information, Tyler and I had a conversation with the owner of the Holiday Inn as well as the general manager. So none of this is a surprise to them, because after the report came out, we thought it was important that we had a conversation with them. And again, we're not competing with hotels already offering space. We think this will complement our hotel product in the future.
Okay. Questions for staff or our consultants up there? Yeah, Nick.
I'm wondering about what initiated the study, and you may just need to remind us, because you
sure.
probably said this before, but there was mention of an interest being shown in a convention center. So that interest is coming from outside the community, within the community, both, or who is showing that interest?
Both. As we're out and about, whether our sales team is out in the state of Missouri or we're out in the community, we consistently hear that we can't come to Columbia because we've outgrown your space. There's not room for our group. There's just, besides the one major hotel, if that hotel's full and we have a similar size group and they need to have it on that same weekend, we can't host that group in Columbia. You go from, you saw the space, you go from the 19,000 square foot at Holiday Inn to the next biggest one is Hilton Garden Inn, and that's, 7,000 less square feet. So we have had conversations within the community and without outside of the community, and I can give you all the assumptions in the world. I can assume a lot of things of what size we need or why we need it, but it got to the point where enough interest was being shown that we felt that we needed something professional to come in to say, this is what Columbia needs and this is how much it will cost. It's a tool.
Just to follow up, So when you're talking about people that you might not be able to say who, but can you give an idea of the kind of organ parties that would come if we had a larger one? By that, I mean people who, you say, some tell you that they've outgrown us.
Sure.
So what would be an example or examples of that kind of group?
The biggest example I can come up with is Missouri Association of Fairs and Festivals, who came here for many, many years, and they had to have space for their trade show along with meeting space, and it got to the point where there wasn't enough trade show space. They were using all the space for their meeting space. Many years ago, I'm going to point out Gabe, Missouri Parks and Recreation Association had to quit coming to Columbia because the group got too big for our community. And then we have a lot of businesses and or community groups that have to either look outside hotels and or go to another city if they have a big event because we don't have the space that they need.
Can I just ask one more? Sorry. Who are we losing those meetings to?
Springfield. Lake of the Ozarks is a big one because it's still central. You've got people wanting to go to the lake, but I can't compete with the lake from May to October, but I can certainly compete with it for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Betsy, you had your hand up. Down. Other questions?
So I was looking at some of the earlier slides from Tyler's presentation, and I feel like I kind of missed some of the discussion. There was a figure on parking and a figure on footprint. I think it was slide 22. Can you tell me a little bit about how much parking you think you would need, especially for a downtown?
I'm going to look at Tyler to answer that question.
700.
Yeah. So the 750 figure, the 750 spaces is what we'd
for scenario
likely
two.
Need in terms of you know, what that looks like in downtown versus the other site. You know, this is kind of a gross figure. The hope would be downtown, if you build there, maybe there's existing parking that somewhat subtracts from this net new need. You know, there's the existing structure next to the Broadway. Maybe there's 100 or so spaces that could be used for this. We haven't gone that in depth with the study, but I'm guessing that downtown, a significant majority of the 750 would still need to be accounted for to be built. And Don Dunn, you know, did a little bit of back the envelope work on how maybe a new parking structure could be an option as part of the larger development. But you know, maybe it's underground. I think was something that we talked about then. But that would need to be something that's figured out. 750 obviously is pretty high count. Certainly something that you can't build in a surface lot, at least in the urban location.
Father, if I could add, Don speaking, that the equation of how many new parking spaces to build also is very much tied into the adjacency of a possible new hotel. The idea from a pollution and cost control environmental strategy would be to park once if you're visiting from out of town so that you can walk between your hotel room and the conference convention center. If they are too far apart, either the meeting planner and association planner has to provide bus transportation, which costs something, or people are parking twice. And we don't want to have to build two parking capacities, one at a hotel and again replicating it in a remote convention center. So the downtown site, if there were more hotel rooms, would be a very walkable condition where you park once and maybe don't even get in your car during a 2 or 3 day event.
Yeah, reflecting on the types of conferences I've been to, those are by far the best. I'm looking at the next slide where you describe scenario one and scenario two. So you have different, slide 22. Now it's hard to read. I don't know where I was. You had a different number of parking and a different footprint on scenario one and scenario two on one of the slides.
It's this one. You can see 675 and 745.
Thanks. What's the driver of having different parking between essentially a model that the city funds versus a model that is public-private partnership?
Yeah, it's a great point, and you know, I'll double-check the report, make sure that we have this written out, but the 675 is basically for the convention center only, whereas the additional, say, 70 to 75 are those dedicated spaces you need for the hotel. So that scenario two is the convention building plus the hotel tower next to it.
Yeah,
so the standalone building in scenario one, let's say a developer decides to build a hotel next to it, that developer's going to still need to build his spaces for his hotel, if that makes sense. The 675 is just for the building only, whereas the 750 is for this, you know, in a vacuum, building plus hotel.
Sure. And the facility footprint, 2.5 what?
Acres.
Acres. Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question. So on early slide, when you were looking at the market with the associations, the statewide associations, when you asked them where, like, to rank their preferences, how do I take it to it?
This one?
Yeah. Branson and Osage Beach are not listed, but if that's who we're losing to, I'm wondering, was that an option for them to choose from? I mean, you mentioned also that it was a little bit of bias because since it was Columbia asking, of course they were going to say Columbia, but I don't know if we have any insight, or Amy, if you have any thoughts on that one.
Now, Branson's not one that it's Springfield.
Oh, okay.
Springfield is listed. Lake of the Ozarks is not listed. And I believe that was an open-ended question, so I don't know what the answer is.
Okay. I was just wondering.
Yeah, you know, if we could go back and do it again, definitely would have included Osage Beach. We included these markets that we've done studies for, and we're top of mind. It would be interesting, but I'm going to guess it would be part of kind of the group below us. But maybe it is above St. Charles, though. Obviously, there's you know, the outdoor rec piece of it. But no, we did include that one. We do have Springfield, though, right there in the middle.
Okay. And then my other follow-up was kind of, Amy, to your point, does the Wyndham have any plans for doing any expansion like this study is suggesting they should?
No. This is for your information only. Okay. I will tell you that there is interest. There is interest in the public. I have shared this with whomever is asked, and you know, I think that this is a great tool to share, and I wouldn't be surprised if there isn't something that comes out of it.
Because, and as a reminder, you're not bringing this to us to be like, what do you want to do, council, to build a convention center?
No.
It's more of like, this is the feasibility.
Correct.
And the options that are out there, if, especially a public-private partnership or someone wanted to step forward.
Yeah, it's an educational tool for us. It's an economic tool for those who are considering building in Columbia.
Okay. Yeah, Don.
Is both the presentation and the report, are they currently available online somewhere, or will they be available?
We can,
I've
just been sharing it, and I interrupted you, I'm so sorry. I've currently just been sharing it, but we can put it online on our website and or the city's website, whichever is, are both, and so people can access it as needed.
And the report is linked on tonight's agenda, but yeah, yeah. Yes.
So, this is for our information.
Mm-hmm.
Only? I mean, what would be next steps for... I mean, this is an incredibly long and detailed report.
It is.
Where would this go next? In terms, we have this sense of feasibility, then somebody needs to say, yes, it's feasible, no, it's not. That's not just the council that would be involved in that, of course, but where do we go from here?
So this has already been distributed to our advisory board and to those that participated in the focus groups. I believe next step should be that we make sure that it is accessible to all hotel owners, because they are always looking for, hotels are always looking for their next big step, what their next, you know, what could help with their development. So share it with all hotel owners, and then we have it as a tool as we're talking to people who are interested in building in Columbia. We use that as, this is what we know, this is what you could do successfully.
You mean someone who might be interested in building a facility like
correct.
This?
Correct, correct.
Have we gotten that kind of...
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Betsy.
Do we know of anyone just in the private sector who might be willing to do this without public support?
Probably not after the study. yes, I think that conversation is probably one that will be held, because if the city will be asked to put money into it, then, you know, the city will ask for, you know, if we need to have X amount of group availability to put groups in there so we can help our other hotels. So I think that's an answer that I can't give clearly. I think some people would, that's a lot of money. If people can get public help, they will. But then there's the conversation of what ties to the public funding.
And does Discovery Parkway, I thought most of that was private development down there. So
it is.
Linking it with the university and getting support from the university, what side of the highway are we talking about here?
We're talking about the side where the hotels are already being built. And so I think there's two discoveries, and so I think there was just confusion as we were going through. So you've got the discovery that is being built with the two hotels,
right.
And that absolutely has a space you could build on. There is the discovery across the highway, and there is green space there. I don't know if that's available for building on or not, but that would be where the partnership with the university would come in, if that was a space that could be used.
Because it looks like there's a lot of development going on down there,
mm-hmm.
on the west side of that.
Right. Yes, they've got one hotel that's, I would say, 3/4 of the way built,
yeah.
And another one ready to start.
And they already have one.
And they already have one, so yeah, three hotels.
Yeah. You had a follow-up, yeah.
I understand the district did a study.
Mm-hmm.
How does that study and this one comport?
So we were very well aware that the district did that study, and it was important for the downtown. So from the beginning, we had our consultants meet with the district, meet with a district consultant, and I think they took that because they met with them and they had that information that kind of built into the insight that they had that they delivered in the report. Is that correct, Tyler? Would you say that?
Yeah. And we know Tom and the team at HVS did a thorough read through of that report, and they were tasked basically with fitting to the site just to the west of the Broadway. So that was about a 16,000 square foot ballroom. So, you know, anywhere from 50 to 75% of the size that we're talking about, and then much smaller meeting spaces. It's a product that, you know, could work, I think, from just a private sector standpoint. You know, it would be a well-performing conference center. You're just leaving some business on the table. You're not really bringing in new business, new conventions. You know, it's even smaller than the Expo Hall at Holiday Inn. Would likely cannibalize some business from the property. So a lot of that business might not be what we call net new in terms of new dollars being brought in. That said, you know, I think our options at Holiday Inn or another place, a Greenfield site where we build this true convention product, I think there is still probably room for maybe it's a conference facility with a 10, 11,000 square foot ballroom in downtown. It could be a really high quality, high finished product. But maybe that's built in the next 5 to 10 years, you know, separately from a larger convention center.
So both and perhaps.
Tyler, I have a question. You mentioned Lincoln, Nebraska, and I remember years ago when they were doing something with the convention center, and I believe they were using TIF financing for it, but is that a city-owned project, or is it a public-private partnership?
That's a great question. So they're working on that now, and maybe you're thinking of the arena when they built that. That was almost this, like, modified TIF, where they used basically sales tax and hotel tax within three-quarters of a mile district that funneled back in to pay the project, and now it's sunsetting earlier than anticipated because of how well Haymarket District's done. But the convention center could be funded through a similar mechanism. The idea most likely is that an authority is created, and this isn't a guarantee yet, but it could be this city-county joint authority type entity that oversees it.
Okay.
And then the hope is they primarily pay with city funding with some state backing as well.
Okay.
But the authority model would essentially be, you know, this nonprofit corporation with a board members from city, state government, possibly even hoteliers, and then that building operates under their quasi public private authority.
Okay, thank you for that. Any other questions for Amy or Tyler?
Can I ask if we do we look at parking issues if we did something downtown?
Maybe we would.
Did I miss that? I know there was discussion that it just isn't a big enough space, so maybe.
They said that they were concerned about parking. They would need about the 750 parking spaces for the downtown. But they didn't, you know, they said maybe a new parking garage or parking underneath, but that's about as far as they got.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Tyler. Amy, anything you want to say in closing?
No, we just hope that as this report is made more public, that this helps in some decision making in future building within our community.
All right, appreciate that. Thank you, Tyler. Thank you, Don. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Yep.
Thank you.
Been a pleasure. Thanks so much. Hope you have a great night.
Thanks.
You too.
All right. We are now going to go into close. So I'll make a motion that the City Council of the City of Columbia, Missouri, to immediately go into a closed meeting here in Conference Room 1A, 1B of City Hall to discuss legal actions, causes of action, or litigation involving a public governmental body and confidential or privileged communications between a public governmental body or its representatives and its attorneys pursuant to Section 610.021 of the Revised Statutes of Missouri. Can I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Peters. All right, Ms. Foster.
Wait.
Who? Mr. Foster. I was about to say Betsy Peters. Ms. Peters. Hello, yes. Ms. Carroll.
Yes.
Mr. Foster.
Yes.
Mr. Waterman.
Yes.
All right.